Welcome to our UFC Qatar post-fight show. I'm Ariel Helwani on a beautiful Saturday afternoon here in the northeast of the United States. This is tremendous. A 3:52 p.m. Eastern time post-show. Oh my word, that is phenomenal. I am such a happy man right now. And that was a really great card. We were talking before the event. Should we do a post-show for this one? Should we not do a post-show for this one? Thought it was a great card on paper, one of the best fight nights of the year on paper with a lot of stakes attached, especially to the top two fights. And I think the card from top to bottom, I think it delivered. The third to last UFC on ESPN card. It comes and goes, and it is, of course, headlined by Armin Tsarukyan defeating Dan Hooker. That's what happened in the main event. Second round arm triangle choke. Very dominant first round for Armin Tsarukyan, who looked absolutely shredded, looked to be in phenomenal shape. Would you believe his first fight, his first win in MMA? He did have three grappling matches this year. His first win in MMA since UFC 300 in April of 2024. Of course, he was supposed to fight for the belt back in January, pulls out weigh-in day due to the injured back. He's been sitting around, has been waiting, has been biding his time. Now he finally gets this opportunity, third to last show of the year. He thanks Dan Hooker for agreeing to fight him. He almost does the unthinkable at the ceremonial weigh-ins. He headbutts Hooker. Everything's okay. Back and forth they went. Great first round, frenetic pace. Hooker was game, went for a few guillotines, but especially in that second round, the way in which Armin scrambled out of it, got on top, full mount, and then went for the finish. We've seen some dominant performances this year where the dominant grappler did not go for the finish. It looked like Armin was trying to make a point, trying to go for the finish. His dad in attendance for the first time for one of his fights since 2019. Afterwards, he calls out Ilya Topuria. He gets on the microphone. He says, "Pick me. I'm the toughest guy, and I'll be ready to fight at the end of January. If you want to fight me on that schedule, January 24th, first PLE in the Paramount Plus era, I could be that guy." So we'll talk about all of that. And of course, co-main event was a massive one. Ian Machado-Gary, the pride of not only Ireland, but Brazil as well, going up against the former champion, Bilal Muhammad. Ian said he was going to knock him out. He guaranteed he would knock him out. It was a three-round fight. He did not knock him out, but he did win rather convincingly, I thought. 30-27 on two judges' scorecards. One had a 29-28. Afterwards, he said, "I'm the number one guy in the division. Islam, come after me. You just saw what I did to Bilal. 0-7 as far as takedowns. You won't be able to take me down. I'm the next guy in line." Shavkat Rakhmonov, who beat Ian a year ago, was in attendance. We'll see how he factors into everything. And of course, Kamaru Usman out there as well. We'll get to that and everything else that transpired. A lot of great results, but it's not just me on this Saturday afternoon, my friends. Back-to-back weeks for three pockets like the Ringer MMA days around here. Oh my word, we've got the mayor of the Nutmeg State, a.k.a. the man in the hat. What is happening here? What is going on with the black hoodie look? We didn't even plan this, but that's how in sync we all are. First, I'll say, am I going to get this right? Am I going to get that? Oh, I got it right. Chuck Minnanal in the house. Hello, Chuck. How are you?
I'm all right. I think we'll get together for that burglary a little later on. But this is great that we get this out of the way first, early.
Yeah, yeah. I swear, everyone, we did not plan on the black hoodie look. But that's the vibes on this Saturday, November 22nd. PT has got to be a pig in shit. It is 8:56 p.m. over in ERA. He's the patron saint of the Emerald Isle. He is the host of the critically acclaimed podcast, The Crack, the one and only PT Carroll. PT, what is The Crack?
The Crack is fantastic. I mean, I feel like the last two weekends, we've had a lovely kind of welterweight moment. Shavkat showing up tonight. Fantastic timing, given that we thought this was the last leg. Could Gary do it? As you said, did he talk himself into a corner with his own stipulation that he imposed on himself in the lead up to this, saying he needed a finish? I'm very excited to talk about all this, and I'm wondering who you boys have as number one contender in both the welterweight and lightweight divisions.
Well, that's a great way to set it up. And by the way, I keep laughing every time Andy, thank you to Andy for being here with us, and Oscar as well, behind the scenes. Every time you go to the three shot of us, we're like a tag team trio. We're like
all over a blanket.
They're not even any logos or anything. They're just straight black hoodies. It's so weird.
It's like the same hoodie. I can't believe it. Chuck, what do you make of this situation? Because there is a jockeying position right now in the lightweight and welterweight divisions. Let's start with the main event. Let's give Armin his flowers. Very dominant. He looked great. It was exact. look, maybe in the co-main, it wasn't what Ian needed, but in the main, dare I say, it was exactly what Armin needed to do. I thought he put an exclamation point on everything that's been happening to him over the past year. That was the perfect type of performance for him to come back with. What did you make of it?
I thought it was the best he's looked. And obviously, like, it has been a long time. And you know this business, man. It's like, in a recency sense, everybody's like, well, where is this guy? They showed Rachmanov, and you're like, oh, yeah, this guy still exists in that in the welterweight division. He should be considered, too. But when you don't see a guy, especially a guy who doesn't necessarily keep himself in the headlines, when you see him show up in a situation like this, drew some attention, obviously, with that headbutt in the weigh-ins, goes in there and basically, I think, put on one of his best performances, if not his best. Looking Jack, like you said, just looking like he's transformed a little bit over the last, 19 months. And then, get a second round submission of a very tough guy who had been defying odds in his last couple of fights. And I think was enjoying this kind of house money moment where he's just right back into fighting big names. To me, it was very impressive. I felt like there was a lot of pressure on this fight, especially with Paddy Pimblett just kind of in the wings all week in Qatar. Like, this is the exact performance I think that Armin needed to make the statement he did.
PT, we'll get to the next steps in a moment, but first, your reaction to how good Armin looked today.
He looked fantastic, and I'll tell you what, I don't know if you guys are on the same page as me. When I saw the way he acted at that weigh-in, when he threw the head into Hooker the way he did, I was like, is he rattled? Like, why are you acting like this? A guy who has been punished, let's be honest, for his behavior with the UFC in terms of pulling out that late fight against Islam Makhachev at the start of the year. I was thinking, is he cracking up here? Is he cracking up under the pressure right at the final hurdle again? Is he just falling over it? But I thought he answered any kind of doubts I had spectacularly tonight. He looked absolutely immense. You know, I understand why the UFC want to put Paddy Pimblett, like, I could understand why they would want to put Paddy Pimblett in a situation with Ilya. He's a huge star. He's massive in the UK. He's massive all over the world. But would I pick Paddy Pimblett to be Armin Sarukian? I would not, based on that performance.
Okay, so here's the thing, guys. This is actually a gift from the gods for the UFC. Like, this has all worked out so perfectly for them because, look, Ilya hasn't fought since June. He should be ready to go. Paddy very clearly is ready to go. He hasn't fought since April, his win over Michael Chandler. The best way, we continue to say, of the people available, the best way to debut the Paramount Plus era in 2026, first show of 2026, rumored to be at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, January 24th. I'm calling it a PLE numbered event. You know, they're going to keep those, you know, title fights on the number of events, we suspect. The best way to start this is Ilya versus Paddy. You just had Armin win, look good. He's now the number one guy. He's waiting in the wings. You bring him out there and yet you keep this train rolling along. I'm sorry, there is zero momentum towards a Justin Gaethje title fight against Ilya Topuria. And now that Armin did what he did, I think he completely knocked Justin out of the way. There is zero interest, zero momentum. I would sign up for Armin versus Ilya right now. But I think you have Paddy there. You want to strike while the iron is hot. He's ready to go. He hasn't fought since April. It's going to be almost a year since his last fight by the time this January date comes along. Do Ilya versus Paddy. You saw the little run-in. You see the animosity there. Do that in January. Have Armin in the front row. He fights the winner. And now the lightweight division is back rolling like it was when Islam was champ. What do you think, Chuck?
I agree. And I mean, honestly, if it happens, what did you say, January 24th is kind of speculation. If that happens, that is not so far off. That is 2 months away. And for I appreciate that Armin basically qualified himself by saying, listen, I'm ready to go. If you want to fight in January, I'm ready. That was a smart move. But I'm with you 100%. I think and it's not necessarily that you're just taking the novelty of a Paddy Pimblett fight. At this point, the dude's 7-0 and he has looked very good. As he's kept going. So it's not like you're just throwing a guy in there, you know, busting up the meritocracy and throwing a guy in there who just doesn't deserve it. I still think that Paddy maybe doesn't deserve as much as Armin, but like he still brings some danger element to that. So I like that. I love the idea of having the challenge. See, you know me, and we've talked about this many times. You love the idea of the dangling carrot beyond it. So like if you do have Armin sitting there, wouldn't that be great? Because I think he just reminded everybody that he's going to be a problem. And honestly, man, he probably needs some shine again. I think the UFC needs to do a good job of like maybe getting behind Armin a little bit and and juicing him up a little bit to get him ready for that gig. But right now, dude, you saw, like, I was, when I looked at, like, when Pimblett had that really brief moment, you know, with Taporia, where he's like, they're calling each other names from afar. Don't you just kind of feel it? It just feels destiny that they've got to fight at this point.
Absolutely. It's like, I feel like it's a win-win for the UFC to make the Paddy v. Ilya fight right now, because these are both commodities. If Ilya loses and Paddy's the champion, great. He's a massive star already, and a lot of people are doubting him. Perfect situation is to put Armin against him. If Ilya beats him, as most people would predict he will, that's a massive star moment for Ilya again, because of Paddy's star power, again leading to Armin. It's exactly what you're saying, Ariel, to make the biggest splash, and we know that's what they want to do. They want to come out swinging in this new TV deal. Best way to do it is Paddy v. Ilya.
So here's the one thing, PT, let me ask you this. I was not expecting Armin to say, put me on that January card. and it is very soon, but it is far enough to where, like, a 2-month turnaround isn't crazy, especially when you didn't seem to get beat up all that bad in this fight. Do you think there is a chance the UFC will reconsider, or do you think they should do it as we're doing it, continue with the Paddy thing, do that plan, have Armin wait? They were mad at him. Hopefully now, you know, he's back in their good graces. He was a great ambassador. Their first show in Qatar, big deal for them. Or what do you think? Because, like, I have to say, that was interesting. He threw the curveball. He seemed to know something there by specifically mentioning that date. So what do you think?
Oh, yeah, I had the feeling, and the same as Paddy did, like, in the lead up to this fight, is like, why isn't this announced yet? I know a lot of people disagree with the fact that Paddy Pimblett is in this spot or is even in this conversation, but he absolutely is. And we know in this day and age, the UFC, the currency is spectacle, the currency is stardom, and he has all of that. So for me, for Armin to come in now in January, just him saying January would say to me that the plan is already there with Paddy. It's already been there. Did they not announce it before this to allow this to have more stakes coming into Doha? Perhaps. I don't think he's getting in Paddy's way of this. I think the same as him, why hasn't this been announced yet? It seems like the natural fight to make. Well, maybe not the natural fight to make, but the obvious fight to make if you're the UFC.
What do you think about this? Because you saw this, Chuck. He was talking to Hunter Campbell there afterwards. Great moment with Armin and his dad, and they mentioned first time since 2019 he's in attendance and he came to the cage. But Armin was very clearly speaking to Hunter Campbell in the front row, cage side. So what do you think? You think they changed their mind?
I don't think they'll change their mind, but I do believe that he's probably, like, he's objecting, right? Like, he's saying, like, hey, look, you see what I did? You want, because the thing he pointed out in that post-fight interview was, like, if you want the toughest fight, I'm the toughest fight. And I think that that is his best argument. There's going to be a segment of the population, especially within the diehard sect, that's going to echo that, right? That, like, this is the guy that should be facing him. And there's no, it's not wrong if he ends up getting that fight, I would be perfectly happy with that. I just think that given the circumstances, they won't. And I agree with what PC was saying. I agree with you, what you're inferring here is that it's probably already maybe not an indelible ink in the minds like of what's happening in the UFC, but I think that that's the fight they want. They want to do the Pimblett fight, and it makes complete sense.
I guess that means Justin Gaethje's on the verge of retirement, huh?
Who is talking about Justin Gaethje in this spot? Like, no one is answering this
Justin
question
Gaethje
other
only.
Than Justin Gaethje with a, like, well, maybe he has a chance. Like, he feels way further away from a title shot than even Kamaru Usman, who most people are poo-pooing as well, right? Like,
yeah, because Kamaru Usman's at least a former champion, right? Like, yes. He at least has that. Gaethje has none of that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not in the conversation. Let's be honest. He isn't.
By the way, Armin Tarukian had not fought in 2025. Like I said, his last fight was in April of 2024. However, it is worth noting, and they flash this up on the screen, since 2019, tied for second most wins at 155 pounds, Islam 11, and Armin and Charles, who he beat at UFC 300 with 10 wins, 5-fight winning streak. And you would have to, you know, assume if he was fighting a little bit more since last April, he could have added a few to that. Of course, he was supposed to fight for the belt, and I wish we would have seen that fight. Now it feels like we're a little far away from that because Islam has moved up. But to me, that is such a fascinating fight, him versus Ilya. Worth noting, this is from Aaron Bronstetter, a great factoid from him. He just tweeted, if Ilya is matched up against Armin before next October, so October of 2026, I believe it would be the first undisputed title fight in the men's divisions between two fighters in their 20s since Holloway Ortega in December 2018. Now, I haven't verified this, but Aaron's pretty good with the factoids. That's pretty crazy. That would be 8 years, essentially, since two guys in their 20s are fighting for a an undisputed UFC title.
30s is the peak? 30s is where you want to be?
I don't know. What does it tell us? What does it tell us?
You're telling me this is an interesting factoid. Why is it interesting?
Shevchenko 37 wins. 1 week later, he's like.
I think it says a lot about how good these two guys are. I think it says a lot about the UFC giving title shots to some of the older guys. And it takes a long time to get to the top and to earn and warrant those titles. And I just think it's an interesting factoid. You fucking
asshole.
Let
him have his moment, will you?
Jesus.
Beatsy, for God's sake.
He was saying
this isn't the crack, man. You can't just interrupt the man.
It's a pretty good factoid. I don't know.
It's a good one.
This is great.
It's
wow, what? The first time since 2018?
Who has a better chance of beating Ilia Topuria? Armin or Patty?
Armin.
Yeah.
The smile on Chuck's face when I said that.
There's a little bit of me that's, I'm intrigued, you know? I don't count Patty out of it, you know?
No,
neither do I. He's constantly like overcoming doubters. Like years and years ago, the conversation about Paddy Pimblett was, like people like him, but he's never going to get to the UFC. He got injured like after he lost the Cage Warriors title, and people were like, I don't even think he'll be the Cage Warriors champion again. So it's like, it's always been doubt. He's got to the UFC now. He's not only in the UFC, he's on the verge of fighting for a title. So he's constantly overcoming the odds, and he's a brilliant submission artist. Like, he is a very unorthodox guy. I think Ilya is really, really good on the ground. I think he'll be a heavy favorite, and rightfully so, but you definitely cannot rule the dude out.
By the way, shout out to the chat. Shout out to the chat. Thumbs up to the chat. I put up a poll right now, guys. Doing it all over here, okay?
Wow.
I'm dealing with PT's nonsense.
This is
I'm hosting this damn thing, moderating and putting up polls. New York Rick, Ant, wherever you may be, thanks for the help. The question was, who should fight Ilya next? Okay, and as of right now, almost a little over 600 votes. Armin 74%,
wow.
Patty 23%, Gaethje 4%. Now, this might be a little, you know, recency bias,
right?
But it's clear that the people so far want Armin, and I presume he's going to run away with this one. Chuck, what did you want to say there?
I don't remember, but I will say that if you look at it, so you're asking about Patty. I think that it's easier to be like in a hype. If you're trying to hype the fight up, it would be easier for people to be like, oh, that's a cakewalk for Sarukyan, right? Like, this should be easy. But if you look at Sarukyan is what I'm trying to say. If you look at Sarukyan, you're going to have a little bit more of a balanced perception of like, okay, this guy presents doubt to the situation, right? We just saw him do this to a guy who's very tough. I think that's all it is. You know, it's like there's a time when you want to see the best fight the best. I just think that we're just playing with such new players in all of this that why not do the thing that would draw the most eyes? You know what I mean? It's a different kind of scenario.
I do want to say this, though, because I'm seeing some people saying, like, I can't believe we are saying Patty deserves it more than Armin.
That's not what
Patty does not deserve it more than Armin. And if you're asking me right now, there's an open slot, who would I want to see more? It is Armin versus Ilya. And Armin deserves it because of the winning streak, because of everything that's happened, and the time and the wins and everything that he's done over the last, you know, 6 or so years. But because it's all right there, and you want to start, like, from a promotional and business standpoint, and let's not pretend that these factors don't go into the decision making, start the Paramount Plus era with a very popular fighter challenging for the belt, and then you have him waiting. Don't have him fight anyone else. Armin has done enough. You have him waiting. He's got a history with both guys, and you have him fight the winner. Like, it's all right there, as opposed to the only other thing that I could see. These are the other two options. If you really want to bypass Patty, which I don't think they do, but if you really want to and you're going to listen to the people online, you'll then do Armin versus Ilya, and you'll have Patty fight. You'll do Armin versus Ilya, and you have Patty fight Justin, right? And they could battle it out to see who is next. I don't think that makes sense, but fine. And by the way, I'd favor Patty in that fight.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to be honest. The other factor is you do the other scenario, in my opinion, is you do Armin versus Ilya. Excuse me, you do Ilya versus Patty, Armin waits in the wings, And then you ask yourself, well, what do you do with Justin Gaethje, who is still a player at 155? I'd love to see them do Justin versus Hooker. That was the fight that was supposed to happen in March. I know Hooker's coming off a loss, but he has entered this territory like a Donald Cerrone, where I think that the wins and losses don't really matter as much. He's fun. People love him. This fight week was fun. He fought valiantly today. He just met, you know, a tougher guy who was just absolutely, you know, dead set on winning. Gaethje has only won one fight in a row. They were supposed to fight back in March. Hooker got hurt. Do that one and see if Justin could try to earn his spot at the top of the weight class. I think 155 is very interesting. And usually when a champion leaves, you're kind of left with like some scraps. I don't feel like they have scraps at 155 right now.
Yeah, and Gaethje's not the one who should be dictating terms here. And I know it's not exactly just him. Like, if you go back to his career, his trajectory, this was a dude who'd fight anybody. I think he originally was kind of like, oh, I'm just going to be the Cerrone of the division. He wanted to kind of go in there and throw down with whoever. And he didn't look at himself like he'd be long for the world in the ring. You know, like, he was like, I'm just going to go out there every fight, self-preservation, throw it to the side. It was only later that it became, like, more of a title, you know, and kind of pick and choose. This is all kind of new, but even given all that, even all the favors he's done, he's just not in a spot, given the players that we have right now and where everybody is at, to dictate the terms of what should happen. So I'm sure they can find a good fight. Like you just mentioned, they can put him together with anybody and everybody will watch Justin Gaethje. He doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be, again, in the title for the fans to appreciate what he's going to do.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's see, guys. I think that the lightweight division is very interesting, and hopefully, I mean, as of right now, by the way, Paramount Plus era is about to start in January. There's only two more events left in the ESPN era, as crazy as that is: the pay-per-view on the 6th, and then the 13th Apex show. There hasn't been a single event or fight announced or even like reported on for the new era for 2026. So it's been very, very quiet. I do wonder how they're gonna unveil all of this. But it's not just the first PLE or numbered show main event. It's nothing. There's nothing out there right now.
Excited, though, you mentioned this, and I think it should be talked about, like, and just briefly, but like the finale being that big Apex show, how excited are you for that? Like, bells and whistles, right, for this thing?
Well, I have a great idea for that one, and so I'm going to get to that.
Okay, all right,
we'll
come back to it.
Not to get crazy, because I want to talk about the welterweight division. This has been the month of the welterweights. The big Gabriel Bonfim win at the start of the month. And then, of course, last week in Madison Square Garden, New York City, you had the big win by Michael Morales. You had the big win by Carlos Prachez. You had Islam Makhachev becoming the new welterweight champion. And we always said the last sort of piece of this big welterweight tournament month was Ian Machado Gary versus Bilal Muhammad. I think I was the first person to speak to Ian when this fight was announced, and he emphatically predicted, he said it multiple times, it's knockout or bust. I got to knock him out, and I will knock him out. And he was so convinced, and he was so adamant about it. And then after last week's performances by Morales and by Prachez, and all the chatter coming out of Kamaru Usman, it did feel like he had to knock him out in order to kind of keep pace with those other youngsters, right? Shafkat sitting in the front row, he had to knock him out. In the end, he did not knock him out. In the end, very early on, the cut which Bilal sustained in the JDM fight did open up. There was an eye poke. A point deduction wasn't taken away. There you see Bilal reacting to it all. Second round, there appeared to be another eye poke. That one was a little more, a little tougher to actually see. The first one was a definite. No points were taken away by the referee. But as far as scoring the action, it was 30-27, in my opinion. Like I said, two judges had it that way. One judge had it 29-28. PT, I'll ask you first, what did you think of Ian's performance? Three-round fight, not a five-round fight, which I could have definitely seen this fight going five and would have loved to have seen it. What'd you think of the performance by the Irishman?
I thought it was a very clinical performance, as we've become accustomed to with Ian. He won every round as far as I was concerned. He's won the toughest fight. We were just talking about this. Like, he has won the toughest fight. Michael Morales beat Sean Brady, who lost to Bilal Muhammad. Carlos Prachez, who lost to Ian Gary, don't forget, he beat Leon Edwards, who lost to Bilal Muhammad. he's the closest guy to the title that isn't Jack Della Maddalena, who's just lost the title. I think all of that makes sense, but the problem is Ian's given the UFC an out not to pick him because of him kind of implying that, I know I need this finish, and I know he kind of walked that back afterwards, and I thought he made a great argument for himself afterwards by saying, you know, can you take me down, Islam? I think he's won the toughest fight, but differing to Armin, I wonder, is he the guy that compels the most interest for Islam? You know, like, whether people like Ian or don't like him, they all seem to react to him. Like, I was looking at the numbers from the various sites who cover this event this week. Ian did more traffic than anyone. Like, people are watching this guy. They're intrigued about it. I know he got booed there tonight, and, you know, people are in, like, seem to be indifferent about it online, but
he felt like the main event to me. I mean, yeah. It felt like the main, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that's where he differs from Armin. He might be the most captivating dance partner for Islam at this point, despite him not getting that finish.
And it's hard, man. I know that he put, like, I understand what you're saying. Like, he went on there and said, I'm going to finish this guy or bust. But that's a tough dude to finish, man. This is a guy who stood in there against everybody, Muhammad. And I think it was Vicente Luque, right? Like, way a long time ago, the only guy to ever finish him. So that was that type of demand. You almost have to say, like, okay, I understand your intentions. I don't hold it against him. I know he wanted to. There was a couple times where I thought he might. It looked like he kind of got a shot flush. It's just he's fighting a guy who's just that tough. And in my mind, it's really just his evolution and his understanding of the big picture. Like, even in the lead up to this week, like, the way he was kind of holding court out there and just kind of, you know, commanding the attention. You saw him on the microphone afterwards. This is a guy who was very polarizing earlier. We were talking about, can he even repair an image at one point? Like, you know, people are coming after him in different ways personally and all this stuff. This is a dude whose mental, like, his ability to overcome that, which was something we wanted to know about him, is off the charts, including when he beat Carlos Prochus on, like, a few weeks' notice or whatever that was. It was kind of a rearranged card for Kansas. He goes in there and he wins that one. They're not easy fights, but you give him a full training camp. I'm telling you, man, that's the fight to make still, because he did go the hardest route. I think he deserves it. And there is something about him that I don't want to sleep on either. Like, you know, it may seem like, because we just watched last week, you just watched Islam do work, it may seem like he's going to go right through a guy like Ian Garrett, but that kind of self-belief in your ability to see yourself as a champion is, like, it speaks volumes, man. And I think he's upheld himself so well through all of that.
He's very talented. He's young. He's steadfast in his beliefs. He looked really good today, and I wish he didn't put that pressure on himself that he needed, because that creates the narrative. You know, it's very hard to finish Bilal Muhammad. He is a former champion for a reason, very tough, very durable, but he looked great. Give all the credit in the world to Ian. Stuffed 7 takedowns. Bilal was 0 for 7. Now, to put out, like, hey, this guy couldn't take me down, Islam, you won't be able to do so either, obviously brings up the JDM fight, in which JDM had a lot of success in stuffing Bilal's takedowns. And then, of course, we saw what happened last week. So 1 + 1 doesn't necessarily equal 2. But Ian's striking looked crisp, and I thought it was a great performance. And I believe that his, as you guys said, his strength of schedule has been the toughest. He has taken the toughest road to get here. It's now a 5-horse race. It's a 5-horse race.
It's crazy.
And everyone has
it's fun, though.
Has a say in the matter. And by the way, thanks to the team behind the scenes. I have put up a poll. Don't worry about it. I put up a poll. Who should fight Islam next? Now, the YouTube polls only give us 4 options, okay? So commiserations to Shavkat.
Wow.
I don't know if he gets it, but I wanted to put the 4 guys who have been the most active this year. Ian Machado Gary, Carlos Prochus, Michael Morales, Kamaru Usman, and the 5th would be Shavkat. Shavkat is 19-0, obviously undefeated in the UFC. Michael Morales, 19-0, coming off that incredible win over Sean Brady. Carlos Prochus has done a great job of bouncing back from the loss to Ian in April. He's now 2-0 in his last 2, the incredible knockout of Jeff Neal, and then the knockout win over Leon Edwards. And then, of course, the Usman one, the Kamaru Usman one, is an interesting one because he is a former champion, but only has 1 win since 2021. But that 1 win was over Joaquin Buckley, a top 10 guy, and that was back in June. And so I feel like, Chuck, I feel like every single one of these guys has it. I don't know if anyone breaks out. If it was up to me, I think Ian, due to his activity and the strength of schedule, if we're not going to give it to Shavkat because he's been out, because of course Shavkat should trump him, it feels like it should be Ian, but I really can see them going in any direction. And I feel because Ian didn't get an emphatic knockout win, I still feel like they're going to give it to Usman. They're going to Islam and Ali, and they're going to give it to Kamaru Usman.
He can't even fit in your five person poll. Like, Usman's so far down that he doesn't even fit in that. How would that work?
It's actually Shavkat that I put out of the five, but I know.
Usman's not in there either, right? Like, you didn't know.
No, he is in the five. Oh, it's Ian Garry, okay. Carlos Praches, Kamaru Usman, right. Michael Morales, and Shavkat.
That's some bullshit, though. I don't see that one, man. Like, I mean, if they do that, this would feel so, like, I don't know what, manufactured or something. It would not feel organic, or like any of this Grand Prix that we're talking about really had a bearing. Ian Garry went and as the backup fighter, did his weight cut, like, what was it, not too long after that Praches fight. It's crazy to me, like, his path. When you really think of it, if they're not going to give it to that guy in this situation, and again, he has the victory over Praches, which he's among the guys we're talking about here, I just don't know what you do. In a weird way, I'm like, the Morales one would be last on this list only because he's so young, and I'm like, why not give him another huge showcase headlining fight before you even put him into a spot like that? Because I feel like this felt like his first phenom moment, right? Like, where you're like, okay, we're starting to see exactly what we got with this guy. But now you kind of capitalize on it, put him in a fight where you really slam dunk it and you make him a real contender in that sense. I'm okay with them pushing him aside. And Carlos Praches should be behind Ian Garry. I just don't, if Usman leapfrogs this field, it's going to feel all wrong to me. Like, this, you would take something that was really exciting with all these guys, and then make it dramatically less so with that.
Could you do, right? If you, right, say that happens, okay? We all don't agree with it. But say Usman gets the shot. Do you put Garry against Morales then? That's a horrible path for Ian. It's crazy.
I would be like trying to kill him off from the contenders list a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's what they did to Sean Brady. PT, rank the five for me right now. Rank the five for me in terms of deserving. The five, once again, are, and I put up the poll right now, Ian Garry 52%, Praches 6%, Morales 25%, Usman 16%. Rank the five.
Are you
five
saying
for me.
Like, just in terms of meritocracy, take out of account what the UFC might like? Just
just like make the queue for me, right? Islam's
Shavkat,
at the top.
Ian Garry, Morales, Praches, Usman.
Wow, Usman all the way. The guy who's at the bottom of your list.
Actually, you know what? No, I'll go Morales, Usman, Praches, maybe. I mean, interchangeable.
It's tough. What do you think, Chuck? Who's
I agree
at the top
with,
there?
You I
put
agree,
Shavkat first?
I would. Okay. I would, because I feel like that dude is like the one guy that would be just so fascinating in the scenario. The rest of them are too, but like more fascinating than the rest. I would put him number one, Ian Garry. Probably Praches, and then I might go Usman, and then, but I'm not saying I put Morales at the bottom of that only because I'm like, I feel like we've seen some pretty phenomenal stuff, but I feel like he's not quite as decorated in that way yet. He's a phenom, like the youngest. He represents a country that has never had a champion. He's got all this upside. I just feel like you can get more out of him before you have to put him in that spot.
Okay, you know what? Here's the thing. Now that I think about it, I think because Shavkat has been injured and it's been high profile stuff. The truth is, like, here we are saying, you know, give the title shot to Patty. Patty hasn't fought since April. By the time, it won't be as long. But like, people have gone title shots being out for a year or so,
true.
Right? So yeah. it's not the craziest thing in the world. By the time if they fight in January. Point is, maybe the move is Shavkat versus Islam.
Wow.
Ian versus Kamaru.
Yeah.
Praches Morales.
I like Ian versus Usman. I think that's a great idea, to be honest. Because
there's a bit of history there, by the way. You know, they used to train together over at Tilt Club.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I do like that. I doubt Usman does, though. If Usman is like, you know, I'm about to fight for a title, you know, I saw the tweets in the aftermath, you know, they're putting up the yawning emoji. Henry Cejudo, out of nowhere, came in to back him as well, which is very unexpected.
Wow, that's actually shocking. Wow.
But, like, he's not going to want to fight Ian Garry. Ian Garry looks like, right, on a scale of who you don't want to fight at welterweight now, if you're not fighting for the title, it's Morales and Ian Garry are the ones you're like, I am not fucking going near those lads. Because they look like they are ready to challenge, right? I don't think he's going to fight down I think Usman, and look, he is one of the greatest welterweights of all time. He went on one of the greatest runs of all time. Nobody is taking that away from him. But I just don't see him saying, I'm going to fight in another number one contender fight right now. I just can't see it.
If they did the third fight that you were talking about there with Prochus and Morales, can you think of the equivalent of that? What would the equivalent of that fight be that we've seen? Because you have two dudes who like are as high as you can get right at this moment, right? In terms of contendership, where they're like, they bring a lot to the table. They both go for finishes. They both have attitudes of just like, I'm going to rip this dude's head up. Then now you get a sniper versus sniper matchup. I mean, where have we seen anything like that from just a strictly non-title fight? Like, that would be obscene. Would that be insane? Which one?
Diaz Condit back in the day, maybe, to fight GSP.
Yeah, they were a lot older. Like, these two
that
guys.
Is true.
That, I mean,
yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
Welterweight is so good right now.
I know.
Welterweight is
splattering,
so good.
Lads.
And that's why the Usman thing annoys me, because Usman, like I said earlier this week, comes from the era where I feel like you win one fight and you demand a title shot. And these guys, I don't feel like are cut from that cloth. And they're all young.
Gaethje has that attitude. So, like, what's the common thread with these guys? Like, where are they getting this?
Weird. Go on, Chuck. Keep going.
I think they're both good friends, man, with Henry Cejudo.
Ah, there it is.
Thank you, PT.
There it is.
He finishes all my sentences.
Do you think Ian would have gotten it? And we don't know what's going to happen, but like, had he knocked him out, do you think he would have gotten it? You think so? Wow. I'd love to see Ian versus Islam. I really would. I think it's a great matchup.
Yeah. Fighting Ian does. Like, that's the one thing. People, like, you can say whatever the fuck you want about Ian. Like, you know, you don't have to like him. Like, you don't have to. But you have to acknowledge how good he is. And you have to acknowledge that guys look incredibly different when they're fighting Ian Garry as opposed to anyone else. He's a really fucking difficult puzzle to solve. Look at Prachis. Prachis, it took him 24 minutes to land something meaningful on Ian Garry. And that's a guy who went in against Leon Edwards, a great striker. Again, regardless of what you think of him, one of the greatest fighters the UK has ever produced, arguably one of the best. He starched him. Ian Garry is a nightmare for people. He reminds me of John Jones. Ian Garry reminds me of John Jones.
Tall, yeah.
And the oblique kicks tonight were like that as well. He is unbelievable. And I would love to see that fight. I just think, and I don't think this is the first time he's done this, where he's kind of talked himself into a bad situation by putting so much pressure on himself and stating, like, this is what I need to do to get this, and then not coming through with it. Like, I think he does a good bit of that, but it's also great marketing. Like, everyone's watching this fight knowing that, like, he's after saying himself that he needs to finish this fight. Like, obviously it didn't work out in his favor, but I don't know, man. I think he's absolutely incredible. I think him and Morales have the most interesting style matchup for Islam, as far as I'm concerned.
It feels like the great turning of the page, too, in the sense of, like, last week, Leon, this week, Bilal. And both those guys had to, like, really persevere to end up as champions to begin with. And now they're kind of being like, okay, you're being left behind from this new, you know, all the new blood in this division. And I think that's part of why you're like, well, wait a minute, are we really going to brush off Usman and throw him back in there? Like, this is that moment where, like, all these guys are on the rise. You know, you kind of don't want to revisit, you know, something that we've already been through. That division has had multiple times where it's been stuck kind of in, like, these weird points. This is that point where it's like, it's all full-fledged ahead, new guys. And that's exciting. That's what makes it fun.
100%. Lightweight and welterweight, to me, right now, are two of the best. I would throw bantamweight, but right now I think lightweight and welterweight have the superstars on top. I hope they are active champions, because there's a litany of guys below them. Like, man, Armin versus Ilya would be insane. Paddy versus Ilya would be insane. Ian versus Islam would be insane. Yeah. Morales and Prochus, these are big time fights. Yes, PT.
One thing, right? So I was saying earlier about Ian, like, is he the most captivating matchup they can make? Like, we're saying the UFC will likely go to Paddy because it creates the most eyeballs. Is that Usman's argument here? Like, no. Usman as a former champion, is he the most recognizable guy?
No. Usman is not even in the same stratosphere as Paddy Pimblett in terms of popularity.
And who is then the welterweight? Am I right saying it's Gary?
I think Shavkat has a loyal fan base, but I don't know. I mean, man, Michael Morales has exploded, but he's in one region. I don't know if there's anyone like Paddy. Paddy's one of the most popular fighters and recognizable fighters in the entire sport. I don't know if there's a you know, a one for one there.
A parallel, right.
But it ain't Kamaru Usman, I can tell you that.
Ian would be the closest in my mind.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. Shafkat's pretty popular too.
Yeah.
But he's in a certain region, right?
Yeah.
And then the best thing about the Ian thing, I mean, the layup is, you get to reignite Ireland versus Dagestan. I mean, it's just layup.
Don't fuck yourself with that shit, okay? You can't be doing this. It's late, all right? I don't want to start screaming.
It's not that late.
It's not that late. But you know what? Like, it's literally dinner time.
This is what
I thought he was going to bring it up on the mic. I thought he was this close to saying it.
This is the thing, right? Like, you're right in terms of they will use that. I have to acknowledge that, okay? You were right. You said, UFC tap into this? Absolutely, they will.
Yes, yes.
The problem is, like, especially the way the PFL used it the first time around with Hughes v. Usman and Magomedov, to claim that, like, Ireland has this thing with Dagestan where we're like, oh, here we go, the age-old classic, Dagestan v. Ireland. It's just not true. Like, no one cares.
Says that, by the way. You've made this up.
No.
Literally no one says that.
The PFL were like, will he fight back for his
biggest
friend?
The biggest rivalry in the history of the sport happened to be a guy from Ireland fighting a guy from Dagestan. And so if you happen to have two people who come from those nations, it's a promotional layup to reignite it. It's not that big of a stretch, I'm sorry to say.
It's two random parts of the world that
freaking hated each other.
Come over here with a microphone and just quiz people on what they think of Dagestan. Most people are like,
no
where?
One's saying what? That.
Denial is the first step of that grief, man, I believe, PT. That's...
I really hate them, okay?
I hate them. No one to ever claim that, but those
rip his head off, Ian.
And those two guys hate each other, and it just so happens that the next two guys are tied to those two guys.
Can I just say, Ian at the press conference was like, "Oh, it's 3-0. It's way more than 3-0, dude. It is way more. You know the PFL fights they've had against Irish
that
dudes?
Is true.
It's fucking 12-0. Okay, so I don't think we're sitting at home going, if we get this one back,
I think
it's gonna level the playing field.
Put Artem on the card.
Let's go.
Gentlemen, let's talk. Could we go through the rest of the card here real quickly? Volkan Ozdemir, no time, the pride of Switzerland, with an incredible first round knockout. I mean, just a barrage,
wasn't standing around, was he?
Oh my God, old school. By the way, he too looked to be in phenomenal shape. Shout out to Volkan Ozdemir, defeating Alonzo Menifield. Miktabek Orobai with the another great, I mean, there was a lot of great stoppages. I haven't seen who the performance bonus winners were, but there was at least six or seven, I thought, worthy candidates, defeating Jack Hermanson. He too looked to be in phenomenal shape. I don't know what was going on over there in Qatar, but all the old timers looked to be in tremendous shape.
They're all trying creatine for the first time.
That too. What about a week after Ethan Ewing accepts a fight on 48 hours notice? Now, he flew from California to New York City. There's fan favorite Waldo Cortez Acosta flying from the Dominican Republic to Qatar. How long is that flight? Dominican Republic to Qatar? He arrives Friday morning. Friday morning, guys. He arrives. Like, how did this become a thing in the UFC? Where guys are just arriving the morning of the weigh-ins, just like Ethan
Reminds
Ewing.
Me of Bacoli and Parker, right? When that really happened.
Yes, all of a sudden this is a thing. His fifth fight of 2025. He's now 4-1 in 2025. 3 weeks after he got poked in the eye by Antti Delia and then came back and knocked him out, he knocks out Shamil Gaziev in the first round. Waldo Cortez Acosta, one of the most unlikely, I don't know, fan favorites now in the heavyweight division. He knocks him out at 122 of the first round. I'll go through the rest of the card because there were really some great performances. And one that you can add to that list is the return of Kyoji Horiguchi, fan favorite, man. From Japan. Obviously was a part of the UFC for many years, left 9 years ago. His first fight in the UFC, 9 years. His only loss in the UFC was to the great Demetrius Johnson in Montreal, a title fight, which he lost via armbar. Here he is coming back after a stint in Ryzen and Bellator. He comes back and looks phenomenal against Tajir Ulanbekov, and then cuts maybe the promo of the year, calls out his teammate, Alexander Pantoja. Sounds like a villain. We've never heard him speak English before. I reached out to Dan Lambert, the owner of ATT, where both Pantoja and Kyoji both train. And I said, were you surprised that he called out his teammate? He said, absolutely not. In fact, this was the first time that he had Pahumpa, Pantoja's head coach, in his corner as well, and he calls him the evil boss. That's the way Kyoji rolls. It's and all now pro here wrestling. He is. Yes, I love it. So Kyoji Horiguchi with the big win, and now once again a contender at 125 pounds. Luke Riley with the big win as well, improving to 12-0 with Paddy Pimblett in his corner over Bogdan Grad. Nicholas Dalby with the split decision win over Sajid Izagakhmev. Maybe. Asu Alambayev with the guillotine choke win over Alex Perez in the third round, 22 seconds. Abdulrahman Yahyaev beat Rafael Cerqueira.
He's glad he's doing
Alexandre Topuria, thank you, beat Beksek Almakhan in the, well, not in the first round. It was via unanimous decision. I caught myself there. Ismail Narduev with a great right-hand knockout. First round over Ryan Loader. Narulo Aliyev won the unanimous decision over Shemrock in his debut, and Denzel Freeman won the Kern Jerker via unanimous decision as well. Chuck, a lot of great performances here. Where to begin? Where to begin? Who do you want to highlight?
What happened to Shemrock, Root PT? Come on.
What happened to your boy, PT? Speak for Shem.
That was a nightmare matchup, right? You're going to get a 10-0 fucking wrestler. Like, you come with a guy who, like, gets submission wins, his debut. You know, it's interesting because, you know, it felt like a big night for Next Gen. Luke Riley, a fantastic prospect. And Shem, obviously, doing great things with Octagon. They gave Luke an opponent where you're like, he could do work against Bogdan. Like, everyone who's watched Riley has been like, wow, that's a nice matchup for Riley. He could get a signature KO in this debut. Then you see who they've put Shamrock against, and you're like, well, that is the opposite of that. That is one of the last people that you'd want to make your debut against. And I feel for him. Like, you know, you dream your whole life of getting to this moment, as people know, as Chuck has been talking about. He went on the lam.
7 years.
Yeah, that's right. He's very interested in that story. It's tough, and you can see him posting saying he's putting his shorts and his gloves up for sale. That's when I'm like, I don't think the UFC are going to love that, buddy. I don't think the UFC are going to love that one, you know. But I get it. He wants to buy his man a new gaff, don't we all? Respect.
PT, was that the guy you wanted to highlight? Because I know, like, Chuck was highlighting Shem losing.
Yeah,
which was a weird one after all.
Well, can I give you my real? I got it, dude. Every time I think that Nicholas Dalby is going to go away, he does this, and this actually kind of goes back to his fight with Darren Till, like where he was getting just crushed. It was like two rounds to nothing. And he comes back, dominates the last round for a 10-8. Somehow it gets a draw. This seemed to me, I did this whole piece on this, like this is crazy perseverance, right? Like to come back and do this thing, kind of emblematic of this guy. And he's had a couple of, you know, deep moments in his life where I think he goes into depressions and he comes back out and then he does stuff like this. It wasn't the most impressive thing. It wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing thing. But for him to get a victory at 41 years old in this situation against one of those guys from that part of the world who wanted to, like, you know, who usually dictate control of a fight like this. That was really impressive to me. I was like, man, this guy, 41 years old, we never sing the praises of Nicholas Dalby, but that guy deserves his flowers too.
100%. By the way,
European fighters, man. He is an absolute savage.
I remember your story on him. Remember that fight, the Cage Warriors fight with all the
him
blood?
Him and Ross Houston?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wilder Cortez Acosta bonus, Kyoji Horiguchi bonus, Tarukian bonus, Luke Riley bonus. All their first time winning a bonus. What about Waldo? Can we give Waldo his flowers? I mean, this guy is crazy. Are we getting Waldo versus Tom Aspinall in 2026?
Probably.
Did he leapfrog Cyril Gahn?
Wait. I thought you had
I
thought you were going to say this. I thought you were saving your Apex thing for him.
That is true. Because you know what was interesting? He got on the microphone and he said, put me on the December 13th card. Yeah, he didn't say December 6th. He didn't say the baby.
I know.
He knows said, he's not getting that shit.
Yeah, because I tweeted out, like, I'll look forward to seeing him, you know. on the pay-per-view. And he's like, he basically said that same thing, but he wanted the Apex card, right?
Yo. Give it to him. Just throw another one on there. Who cares?
Hell yeah.
Throw another one on there. Make it the main event. I don't care who he fights. By the way, sign me up for Waldo Cortez Acosta versus Derek Lewis.
Same thing. I thought that exact same thing.
They not fought already? Like, feels like could have happened.
I don't think so. Sign me up for that. That would
heavyweight division's one of them.
Just don't have Derek on your show beforehand. Have Waldo. That would be better.
I mean,
last one was so good though.
Yeah, no, it was great.
Yo, your man there. Your man 205 debut. Fought.
What? What's that?
That dude that made his debut, Yakyoyev, 8-0. You did a better job pronouncing his name.
Yakyoyev.
My man.
Yes, he just came in and smashed this Brazilian dude. And I'm like, wow, very explosive. He subbed him, actually, but he knocked him down early. That
seems to have made a real impression on you. You don't even know his name.
Abdul Rahman Yakyoyev.
Oh, yeah. The pride of Turkey.
That's it. That's what I'm saying.
That's 8-0. Right.
Come on.
It's crazy. I've given you guys multiple opportunities to shout people out, and no one wants to talk about Kyoji coming back. I mean, with the promo.
You did that. That was your one. Like, what can we say after?
I was leaving it for you.
Is Kyoji next in line?
Yeah,
is
it, yeah. Flyweight has nobody. Like, he's straight up. He's in the mix immediately.
Brandon Royval? I don't know. He's fresh,
he's in the mix,
right?
Immediately.
Is he fighting? I mean, if Pantoja wins, you've got a tremendous story there, right? I mean, like, just the fact that he comes back to the UFC and calls out his teammate, you had to know somewhere Dana White was just, like, foaming at the mouth. Like, this is his dream. This is his dream. He's calling out his teammate. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And then if Van wins, I don't know, maybe Pantoja gets an immediate rematch given how good he's been. But I kind of feel like there's just been a lot of the same guys at the top of flyweight. You know, Moreno's there. Royval's there. Amir Albazi hasn't gotten his shot yet. But I just feel was like, it, man.
Was it the Kyoji's Horiguchi? So the Demetrius fight happened in Montreal, right? Like,
yes,
I remember we were there. It was very cold. But was that that was 186. So that was the same one with like Rampage and Maldonado and all that. It's funny because at the time it was happening, I was like, this would be one of the most forgettable cards I go to in sense of like the card wasn't good. But I never shake. We were talking about this a little bit on the crack. That one, like a second left on the clock, right? When Demetrius wins that fight. Wasn't that the one? Like he wins it like with a second to go, and it was like for whatever reason that's like it's always stuck in my head. So there is I guess I've always had like this romantic notion of Horiguchi. Like so, like seeing him come in there and in a fight, I was fairly convinced because he's like 35. You're coming back. You're going. It felt to me like it's one of those fights. You're like, if you want to come back, we're gonna put you against that vicious thing that's pacing back and forth behind that cage there, and to watch him dictate the fight the way he did. That was pretty impressive, wasn't it? I mean, I felt like the dude looked better than ever. So you're like, it's like the Count of Monte Cristo coming back. It's like if they wanted to book him into a title fight after that performance and coming into that situation, I'd be like, go for it, man.
I agree. By the way, supremely, supremely popular. Like he posted something and had like 9,000 likes within an hour when he said like, thank you to everyone for the support. There's a lot of people who are behind him in Japan. It's a great story. He left. He came. By the way, when he left, he was on like a 4-fight winning streak too. It's not like he got cut.
Yeah.
He left and signed with Ryzen for whatever reason. They talked about a great story about him living at the dorms. There's a Horiguchi Hall because he stayed at the dorm for so long at AT&T. But did I call it AT&T? ATT. He has since gotten married, and it sounds like he has a new home. So life is good for one. Kyoji Horiguchi. Now, I want to send something into our Slack chat. I don't know. Do we have the ability to play videos or do we not? Am I asking for too much? I don't know.
Thank you.
But you, no problem. I'm sending something over here because I'm looking on social media for updates, and it seems like there was a little bit of a shoving match between Khamzat Chimaev and Ian Machado Gary back that was caught on camera. It seems like
title shot.
That's
all we need, baby.
PT's deck just came up.
That's all
we need. We need a viral moment. Stole
the show. At 185?
No, that doesn't matter who it's with. I mean, we're just talking about views here. He's getting the people. He's getting the juices flowing. This is what the people want.
Well, Ian's holding court right now at the post-fight press conference. He says, with my friends in Georgia, we're going to stop the Russians from having their success. We're going to stop the Dagestanis, and we're going to take Islam's head clean off his shoulders.
That's how all Irish feel about the Dagestanis,
that's
by the way.
Yeah.
See?
It seems like
I told you.
That's going great.
He said, we're talking about the greatest combat sports industry in the world right now, the UFC, all these other Mickey Mouse organizations. They don't have shit on the UFC. No one. The greatest fighter in the world is the guy who holds the UFC belt. They're going to take that. They're going to take UFC belt out and replace it with Zuffa belt, and they're going to let the boxers know that this is the title that you need to go after. That's the mindset, right?
Hang on, what was that about there? Talking with the greatest organization?
I think respectfully, he was just D1 glazing the UFC.
I was like, why is this going?
PFL catching some strays here.
Am I just not computing things today? By the way, LeBron said our tweet, now this. I'm like, what? Where are we going?
He has been consistent. You'll recall many moons ago, he was asked about fighting in Bellator, and he was like, nah, F Bellator, I want to be in the UFC. So he has been consistent.
But why are they asking him about that? Like, is there a contract on the table from the PFL? Like, what's going on?
I think he's just saying he wants to fight for the belt. He also did say in his post-fight interview, one of my favorites,
reason him up.
He said, sign the contract. Does that suggest that a contract
that is a good point.
Has it been issued? Has the contract been issued to Islam?
I'd say so.
You think so, based on that comment?
Probably.
In case you're wondering, by the way, he's at 53% and Morales is at 24%, Prachis at 7%, Usman at 16%. Ian's on top. Yeah. How about that?
Wait, now do Ian v. Shavkat. Do Ian v. Shavkat.
All right. Real quick.
Let's go. 5 minutes max. 5 minutes max.
Do you guys, can you just talk about something while I do this? Because it's not very funny.
The way he was talking, he made it sound like he was really good at this joke. Look at the concentration on this man's face.
Wow. He sneaks it in when we get long-winded. When we get long-winded, he does like five things, man. No, he's got like a grocery list drawn out when I'm like.
No problem. Check the Syracuse football score, losing 42-0. No problem.
Ben's Grizz against Montana State. They're also losing going into the final quarter.
He's having a rough time.
Yeah.
Four people on the planet care about that one. Shout out to Nottingham Forest, though.
Ben's family.
Big win, PT. Nottingham Forest, big win today. Shout out to Jao Vitor Sab, who sends in a super chat and says, do you think he got the title shot? Unfortunately, Jao, I don't know who you're talking about.
Usman, yes.
Usman, yes, Kamaru? I wish
Can I tell you? So Liverpool played Forest today. Forest,
yeah, I'm aware. 3-0. 3-0, yeah.
Your boys, my friend, Colin Morrisrow, went over to Anfield for his birthday today. Big Liverpool fan. Saw them stands very empty. I wonder if Colin, Jack Dunphy was there, and Mark Ward. I wonder if they left too. I mean, what kind of fans would you say they are, Ariel, if they left early?
Plastic. Plastic fans.
Wow.
They don't deserve to be at Anfield. But I'm happy that they got to witness the best team in the Prem. Absolutely lay the freaking smackdown. By the way, second time in a row. Last year beat him 1-0. This time 3-0. Back-to-back wins.
This time. It was good.
Didn't concede. Chuck, what do you know about the Prem? You know about the Prem.
He's getting in.
I'm just reiterating.
He's coming.
I don't even know. I don't know.
Well, guys, it was as dominant as Ian Machado Gary against Bilal Muhammad. And then in the aftermath, Ian and Khamzat Chimaev had a little run-in. Let's watch it together. Here we go.
Right. Yes.
See if Ian's Instagram.
Okay.
Here it is. Right, talking. Okay. A little slap.
Oh, I need to go back.
No. There's more. Ian's like, what's up?
All right.
Okay. No, maybe like the audio. Play the audio.
Look how cool Ian was there.
Don't worry.
Oh, here we go. We have it. We can hear it.
Woo!
Uh-oh. Now, wait a minute.
Oh, Armin getting...
Big Steve in the middle.
Yeah. Think of the high road, baby.
Shout out. What do you think, PT? What do you think? Ian getting in the mix. This is how you get people talking about you. This is kind of good, no? A little shove there. What's the beef between Khamzat and Ian? Is there any history there?
There was. Remember, there was that clip that went viral of Ian's wife kind of saying to him, oh, you're afraid of him or something to that. That's the only kind of history I know there. But you know, look at this guy. Ian just showing the decorum every time, you know. Yeah. Armin out there headbutting people at the way, and Ian like a gentleman standing with Bilal.
He's a pro's pro. Here, he reminds me of GSP, the way he just shows up professional to every event, you know?
You're like telling me that people want to see a wild animal like Khamzat Chimaev fight? That's crazy, though.
He rage baited him, as the kids say.
He is a space invader, isn't he? Like, he'll get in there. Like, he'll immediately, like, you know, Bilal's in there with his corner, and he just immediately over there. What's the crack, lads? How he's getting on? Whoa, what is going on here? He's like, straight away, here's my whole family. What do you think of these guys? You know, it's a lot to deal with. I think it's all an immersive experience. It's some kind of mind game he plays with people. You don't just get Ian. He's with you. His whole family are around you. You're like, meet everyone. We all really like you, actually. Sorry I have to do this for you. Mind fucking them.
Well, I do want to give a shout out to Todd Oleg, who also sent in a super chat, and he said, Syracuse basketball is on the rise. Thank you for that, Todd. In fact, I was wearing... I had my Syracuse hat too here. So we all got the memo. Shout out to the Newhouse School, number one broadcasting school in the entire world. And so now we're all friends wearing our hats. Gentlemen, It has.
I wore
been,
this one for you, by the way. This was the old Denver Bears. Yeah, the Denver Bears. Like, this is nice where you know, Tim Rock Reigns. Yeah,
yes, and then yes,
we had Tim Wallach and all those guys. Before they wore your hat, they wore this one.
Man, Andy went full screen on me. I didn't realize that my my TV got exposed there. It went off.
What are you talking about? The bookshelf.
Yeah. Just
one of these times you should pull a book off there, just fully like, what the hell happened here?
Just keep, what do you mean? Just keep it on the three shot, will you, Andy?
There we go.
What do you mean? Oh, let me just see. You want one? Oh.
The massive glare of the lights. Like,
what are you reading there?
This is called Dream Team by Jack McCallum, a great the 92
awesome.
Dream Team. Just putting it right back, right over there. You guys can't see it because it's three shot.
It's gone fits right in the there.
Yeah, it's right in. Perfect.
Who's winning the poll?
Oh, the poll. That's right. That's right. Sorry, I forgot about that. Doing so much here. It's reading books. It is Shavkat, 52% to 48%. So it's neck and neck. Only 400 votes so far. I just put it up because there was so much going on. But
our demographic and listeners are all about the meritocracy. All right.
That's what we've learned.
Yeah.
That's what we've learned today. Gentlemen, this has been a lot of fun. Big night of fighting ahead of us. Of course, the huge card down in Riyadh just getting underway. You've got the great David Benavides against Anthony Yard.
Yo, did you read the article? Did you read Elliot's article
about Elliot Wurzel?
Anthony Yard?
Yes. Of course.
Unbelievable. If you're looking, you need your balls to be tickled a little bit ahead of this one. Over to Unground, read Elliot Wurzel's article. Yard's relationship with loss, not only in the ring, but in his personal life. He always knocks it out of the park. He's like the Chuck Mendenhall of boxing.
I was just going to say, the Chuck Mendenhall of boxing.
He is good, man. He does some things that I'm like, man, I wish I'd thought of that. I mean, he's that good. Like, where he does that type of thing. He's always good, man.
There's something about the Queen's English that he sprinkles in those pieces.
Yep.
It gives it a little gravitas. But you, Elliot, Ben, and I include Shaheen in that mix as well, who's now editor, but I think has the same type of skills. Mount Rushmore right there of combat sports writers. And then like when they're building the offshoot one in Riyadh, like Pizzi's on that one. Like
I'm in the Chinese one, yeah.
Yeah.
What am I looking right at here?
Timu Mendenhall. Yeah.
But gents, so big card over there, Devin Haney on that card, Abdullah Mason, on and on it goes, Bam Rodriguez. And of course, don't forget, over at the Prudential Center, AEW Full Gear, gentlemen. Oh, yeah. So it's head to head. It's a dual screen type of night. The fighting continues, but it is over here on the Uncrowned Post Show. Chuck, any final thoughts?
Don't you fret about that Houston Texans team, man. The Denver Broncos beat them a couple of weeks ago, and this is one of those things. I'm just trying to say, keep the hope. Keep the hope because...
I'm feeling good. It's a Saturday afternoon. Why do you have to remind me of this shit? I totally forgot.
I never get a chance to talk to you about this stuff.
Even with the big win.
Yeah.
I'm so depressed.
I still feel like they're the dangerous team.
No, they're not.
I think so.
Your team, what's your record? You're better than us.
9-2, but
yeah, 9-2 is insane for Denver.
Not for a team like us, man. We want 11-0, but I will say that the Buffalo Bills, especially the way that like that playoff game went last year, they still scare the hell out of me.
Yeah, as long as you have number 17 there, and let's hope that he's healthy.
True.
We're good. But the problem is we have no wide receivers. We have no rush defense. Andy's playing us out.
I know.
Here.
She's like,
our special team suck. Our defense is porous. We've got nothing. It's Josh and James Cook. That's it. Yeah, that's nothing true. Else. It Who is... the hell is Davis Mills? Who
Milano's
is Davis
back.
Mills?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't want that to be a bummer. I was trying to
Dawkins
give you hope.
Now,
I was trying to give hope.
We're putting the final thoughts on ice for the next month. All right.
So we do one of these again.
Yeah. We'll be back in a couple of weeks for the final UFC on ESPN pay-per-view. That's on December 6th. We'll do a post-show. And perhaps if something else comes up. Fun to do this back-to-back. Where are you at, TST? We miss you. Shout out Seacoast Stories. Check it out. On your podcast feed.
What a plug. Nice.
That dude's living life large right now, man. If you follow his Instagram, he's loving it.
Vinyasa TST. Shout out to him.
Hit that Lotus.
Gentlemen, enjoy your evening, wherever you may be. Everyone out there, thank you very much. Monday, we are back. Another week of programming. Actually, Monday.
Tuesday for me.
Well, yeah, because this is 100%. But next week, only three shows. No Boys in the Back next week because of Thanksgiving, and no Crack next week as well because of Black Friday, as they say. I don't know who made up these these days off, but I'll be there Monday through Wednesday. Have no fear. Much to discuss. I'll tell you all about my time in Miami. the press conference. That was a fun time. And we'll talk about this card, get the thoughts of New York Rick and GC as well. All right. Thank you very much, Oscar and Andy in the back. Thank you very much, Chuck. Thank you very much, Pizzi. Thanks to all of you. We love you all very much. Please like, sub, numbers, continue to climb here. The number one combat sports platform on the planet cannot be stopped. And neither can Armin Tsarukyan and Ian Machado Gary on this Saturday in Qatar. Appreciate you all watching. Pod will be up in a matter of moments as well.
Frank playing this live, this music.
Back on Monday for your regular Ariel Helwani program. All right, we're out. Enjoy your Saturdays. Thanks for watching, and we'll talk to you soon.